man I worked for at one of the biggest companies in New York City. He ran it for more than 50 years. 15 years, 8 months and 9 days. I was with him every day. I worked for him, I protected him, I looked after him, I learned from him. Bumpy was rich, but he wasn't white man rich. See, he wasn't wealthy. He didn't own his own company. He thought he did, but he didn't. He just managed it. White man owned it, so they owned him. Nobody owns me, though.
Live from the belly of the beast with your host Asad Malik comes a radio show like no other, spreading black consciousness and fighting the forces of white supremacy. This is the most revolutionary show on the airwaves. This is United Black America Radio.
Yo, what's up, family? Welcome to another episode of the most revolutionary radio show on the airwaves. I'm, of course, your brother, Asad Malik, joining you all on the front lines against these here weapons of white supremacy. You understand me? Before I get into today's episode, let me greet you all as I always do with peace. Rahu Bat to all my Nuwabians listening. Shalom to all the Hebrew Israelites. God bless all my Christians listening. Assalamu alaikum to my brothers and sisters in Islam. Peace to the gods and to the earths. Black power to the Panthers, both new and true. And habari gani to everybody else. That's a key Swahili phrase. It means, what's the news? What's happening, family? Something I was thinking about as I put this episode together, and this is going to be a dope episode. I'll tell you why in just a second. But in all my travels, when I go outside of the United States, I come across brothers and sisters who speak multiple languages. You know, I'll come across 13-year-olds that speak 5 or 6 different languages and dialects. Then I come back to the United States and brothers and sisters barely have a grasp on one language. So, again, I hate to date these episodes, but no matter what year you're moving into, no matter what phase of your life you're moving into, make it a priority to learn a new language. Now, for members of United Black America, that's Kiswahili. Kiswahili is our everyday language, and our classical language is Kemetic, all right? What others call ancient Egyptian. So that's the language that we derive Kiswahili from, and most other African languages come from the Kemetic language. If you want to do the knowledge on that for yourself, there's an excellent book out there by a warrior scholar named Dr. Chekanta Diop. He's a Senegalese scholar. And he wrote a book called Civilization or Barbarism that traces the linguistic roots of the Kemetic language across the African continent and through other languages as well. So I put together some resources that'll help you learn Kiswahili and most other languages too. You can find those resources at unitedblackamerica.org/Swahili, family. So definitely learn a new language. If you're going to be joining United Black America, you're going to have to learn Kiswahili anyway. So you might as well get a jump on it. So we are in our Kwanzaa break as an organization. That means everybody went home. Nobody's in the office. It's just me and you and some hardcore members holding the line. Everybody else, they're out doing their Kwanzaa thing, recouping from a very productive year as we rebuild this organization and the future of Black history, ready to come back in 2018 and hit the ground running. So I also went home over the Kwanzaa break. You all know a few years back, my home burned down to the ground, right? I was able to find one of my old laptops. Now, for those of you all who have been rocking with UBA for some years, if you rewind all the way back in, even if you haven't been rocking with us, go to unitedblackamerica.org/iTunes. You'll see that our episodes only go down to maybe like 2014. But we've been doing these for 5 years. There were some episodes out there that I thought, because of the fire and the hard drive I lost, were lost forever. That's what I thought. Well, family, I was able to find some of those lost episodes on my old laptop. And so I'm going to be dropping those for you all. And let me say this first. For those of y'all who are artists, I think you can relate to this. When you go back and you listen to your old stuff, or you read something that you wrote in the past, or you look at something that you drew in the past before your skills were where they are today, you cringe a little bit. You're like, okay, well, this is some elementary kind of work right here, right? My skills are far and above this, and you hate to even look at or think about your old work. You're like, I can't believe I put that out there. But that's part of the evolution, and that's how I feel about this episode. So you all take it easy on me in the reviews and the comments. This is back when I was still, you know, young, fresh-faced. I think this episode dropped in 2000 and had to have been 2011, 2012. So long time ago, long before most of you all knew what we had going on over here. So this episode is called The Pan-African Art of War. So I'm dropping this jewel in your lap today. And while I'm thinking about it, speaking of going back and looking at your old work, we're building our team of writers for 2018. So this is a good chance for you to put a little change in your pocket. If you're looking for some freelance work, if you want to get a side hustle up off the ground and, you know, you just want to put some change in your pocket while you do that, we're looking for writers. And yes, we do pay. All right. So head over to unitedblackamerica.org/write. Now, if you're wondering whether or not your writing is good enough, let us be the judge of that. All right. If you're wondering what you should be writing on, you can write on anything from a black perspective that covers the 959. So what are the 959 again? Real briefly, 9 areas of life, 5 elements of life, and then, of course, the 9 weapons of white supremacy. So 5 elements of life: physical, that's health, physical fitness, etc., etc. Metaphysical. Resources include your time and your money, again, from a black perspective. Think Boyce Watkins. Relationships, think Zaza Ali. Or career and academics. All right, so those are the 5 elements of life. When we're talking about the 9 weapons of white supremacy, we're talking about miscegenation, miseducation, murder, prosecution, eugenics, fraud, infection, intoxication, and integration. And if you don't know what those terms mean, we've already written a lot on all of those different things, or go through the work study course, which you should be going through anyway. And then finally, the 9 areas of life: economics, entertainment, education, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and warfare. Again, all from a black perspective. So send us your work. We'll work the kinks out with you for about 4 posts, and then we'll bring you onto the team. We pay per post. After a certain period of time, we'll bring you on as a staff writer and pay you on a monthly basis instead of on a per post basis. So all your other questions can be answered by going over to unitedblackamerica.org/write. But I need you all to get on that ASAP, because we only have so many positions for writers. And once that's filled, it's filled. So, you know, shoot your shot, though. If it's 2018, July, 2020, January, still shoot your shot. We might have lost some writers. We might still be looking for writers. So definitely take care of that. This episode, because I've dropped it in the past, will not be a patrons only episode. All right. So I'm making this available for the public. However, I will be putting it up on Patreon. So what that means to you is you're going to be able to listen to this full episode, but I do want to send honors to the brothers and sisters who have paid your way if you're listening to this for free. So definitely want to send a shout out to Tamika Williamson, who just came onto the team, Tyrone Givens, Omar Bush, Aisha Ray. All these are brothers and sisters who are coming out of their pocket on a monthly basis to pay our producer, pay our engineers. And of course, they're getting something in return. They're getting access to the work study course. They're getting lapel pins, they're getting T-shirts, they're getting certificates. They're getting a lot for supporting us. And I encourage you to do so as well. You can do so at unitedblackamerica.org/VIP. UnitedBlackAmerica.org/VIP, fam. Get on the team. You can support us for $1. That's a quarter an episode. Get on the team. All right. So with that being said, and without further ado, I bring you the Pan-African Art of War. Peace.
Calm down,
boy. Put my ancestors on them slave ships. A new meaning for the words moving weight. A heavy hustle for a racist. Now they got us working grave shifts. I make a name for myself for all who remain nameless. They hoping we die before 25. They say we inferior. Ain't it funny how we survive? We conquerors, they see the signs. Wally told us free our minds. They try to break us, so they're proud. We gotta keep alive. Pac was a panther. Marley was a lion. Bush your focus all week. We busy shifting blame. We don't see the signs. We this is shit.
It's the ballad of a lost soldier.
I've seen this several times in Africa where droughts have hit and the United Nations and USAID will not assist unless they accept birth control. I've been all through Africa myself and I've seen medical clinics that are full of birth control devices but no safe motherhood delivery kits. There's no anesthesia, there's not even any bandages there. There's crates and crates of birth control pills and condoms. Now, while our commitment to birth control is going up every year, our commitment to authentic economic development is dropping. So we see less clean drinking water funding, less school funding, see less medical clinic funding. Another example is Haiti. Haiti has been hit by hurricanes several times, and the United States and other countries are saturated with birth control. In Haiti now, any woman, 90% of women at least, can now get access to any kind of birth control they want to, government funded, but less than 20% of the Haitians have access to clean drinking water. Now try to imagine there being a natural catastrophe in a country like Canada or Australia or France or England. And we go in there and we say to them, we're not going to offer you any kind of aid unless you accept our philosophy on birth control and population control. That will be outrageous. But that's our standard operating procedure when we go to a black country after a catastrophe of some kind. You cannot believe that we are going to treat people in a foreign country like this and not treat our own population of African Americans the same way. Consider what happened after Hurricane Katrina. One of the first things we did was bring in birth control and contraception. And as we all know, the hurricane disproportionately affected black families in that area. And I seriously doubt if the same kind of disaster hit a middle-class white area, the first response would be condoms and birth control.
This idea that population control could be used to control a specific population was not unique to NSSM 200. For example, before the Nazis took power in Germany, abortion had been illegal, except to save the life of the mother. But under Hitler, the Hamburg Eugenics Court ruled that it would still be illegal for Aryan women, but legal for women of what they called inferior racial stock. According to the court, encouraging eugenic abortions would promote racial hygiene and protect the health of the German people. This new policy eventually led to certain women being threatened with execution if they refused to abort what the Nazis called racially worthless babies.
At about the same time this was going on in Germany, the government of Bermuda was blanketing the island with population control facilities and openly stating that their intent was to limit the numbers of blacks. Then in 1958, blacks in the Caribbean rebelled against a Planned Parenthood-led birth control campaign that was exclusively targeted at non-white residents, while at the same time, prosperous white residents were being encouraged to multiply. Following a similar pattern, a 1965 article in the Pittsburgh Courier newspaper reported that under apartheid, the white South African government was relying on targeted birth control as its primary weapon to reduce the number of blacks in the country.
Unfortunately, we now know that the U.S. government was not immune to this sort of thing either. When three pro-choice researchers investigated the original motive behind the creation of the abortion pill, RU486, what they discovered was that the scientific basis for it was actually developed in the United States during the 1960s by the National Institutes of Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In their 1991 book, these researchers claimed to have found data showing that this agency was looking for an inexpensive and effective drug to control the populations of foreign countries that the government had classified as underdeveloped. The abortion pill was to be tested in these environments, and if successful, the plan called for it to then be introduced into black, Hispanic, and Native American communities in the United States.
In 1977, only 3 years after NSSM 200 was issued, the director of the United States Office of Population, Dr. Reimert T. Ravenholt, publicly stated that it was the U.S. government's intention to sterilize one-fourth of the world's female population. According to Ravenholt, one of the driving forces behind this campaign was the need to protect American financial and commercial interests.
Ravenholt said that some foreign governments were refusing to give the United States permission to come into their country and control their population. He said that, in those cases, the plan was to be carried out by two private organizations with an enormous amount of financial support from the American government. When asked by a St. Louis newspaper to name the two organizations, he said that they were the United Nations Fund for Population Activities and Planned Parenthood.
Among government officials who supported the Ravenholt philosophy of using American intervention to control the populations of foreign countries, perhaps the most powerful were Republican President Gerald Ford, Vice President Nelson Rockefeller, and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. In the mid-1970s, while serving as foreign policy advisor to the Ford-Rockefeller administration, Kissinger personally helped Planned Parenthood set up an abortion counseling program for Vietnam refugees who were being housed at Camp Pendleton Marine Corps Base in California. This was done despite the fact that the vast majority of these refugees were known to be strongly opposed to abortion, and not one of them had ever requested abortion counseling.
At the same time, Kissinger also refused to halt an abortion training program that was being conducted by the Agency for International Development, which operates under the direction of the State Department. Kissinger allowed this project to continue despite numerous complaints that it was in clear violation of U.S. law that specifically prohibited American foreign aid funds from being used for this purpose.
The commitment that Ford, Rockefeller, and Kissinger had for this illegal project may have been a reaction to something Reimert Ravenholt had said a few years earlier. In 1973, he was speaking at a Planned Parenthood national conference where he told attendees that abortion may actually be the most demographically powerful way of controlling population. Ravenholt would eventually be honored by Planned Parenthood for what it called innovation and vision in the population field.
Years ago, A series of USA Today articles documented that there are large multinational corporations on the New York Stock Exchange today that actually got their start in the slave trade. But when slavery ended and Africans could no longer be financially exploited, many of those same corporations began pouring millions into the eugenics movement. The people they had found so valuable as property, they had little use for as fellow citizens. And again, some of those corporations and foundations and institutions are still around today, and every year they still pour millions into eugenics organizations like Planned Parenthood. In fact, if you look at Planned Parenthood's donor list, it reads like a who's who of corporate America. You also have individual elitists doing the exact same thing. People like Bill and Melinda Gates, Warren Buffett, Ted Turner, and many others have used their own personal fortunes to make sure that the eugenics movement never runs short of money. Of course, if you confront these people or these corporations about their support for organizations like Planned Parenthood, they'll tell you it has nothing to do with eugenics. And if someone is naive enough to believe that, that's fine. But to me, it's like someone saying, yeah, I give a few million dollars a year to the Klan, but I'm not really a racist.
After the abortion pill RU486 was approved for sale in the U.S., the controversy surrounding it kept the abortion lobby from being able to find an American company to produce it. That forced them to look for a foreign manufacturer. And after an 8-year search, a company owned by the Chinese government agreed to manufacture the drug for the U.S. market. The company's management made the decision after the Rockefeller Foundation agreed to provide financial backing for the project.
There's also another connection between Rockefeller and RU486. At the end of World War II, the German chemical manufacturer IG Farben was identified as the company that supplied the gas used in the Nazi concentration camps. The gas was called Zyklon B, and evidence later showed that Farben's executives knew how it was being used. In fact, evidence was uncovered to indicate that Farben engineers had actually designed the gas chambers. This led to some of them being tried at Nuremberg for crimes against humanity, including genocide and slavery. Interestingly, IG Farben was a financial partner with John D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil of New Jersey and a company called Standard IG Farben. In addition, within 3 months after Hitler came to power, the publicity director of Rockefeller Foundation and personal advisor to John D. Rockefeller, a man named Ivy Ledbetter Lee, was assigned the responsibility of directing public relations for IG Farben.
After the war, IG Farben would change its name to become known as Hoecht AG. Today, Hoecht is a gigantic multinational corporation with subsidiaries all over the world, including the United States. Ironically, one of Hoecht's subsidiaries, Rusal-Yukloff, is the French company that developed RU486. In other words, the same company that produced the gas used in the Nazi death camps also produced the abortion pill that is now being used in American abortion clinics.
Never underestimate the lengths that your enemy will go to ensure your destruction. Never underestimate the lengths that your enemy will go to ensure your destruction. What you just heard was a segment from a documentary called Maafa 21. The word Maafa is a Swahili word which means the great disaster, and it's a word used to describe this period of time that we now find ourselves in. It is the Maafa that has inspired us to produce this podcast and this radio show on the Pan-African Art of War. Our entire objective here is to identify and develop counter strategies against Maafa. Maafa 21 focuses on eugenics, but again, remember, there are 8 other strategies that have been used against us, 8 other weapons that have been used to diminish black consciousness and ultimately to destroy black civilization. We must understand, as members of the black conscious community and as members of the black community at whole, that we are the targets of these weapons. We must understand that our enemy will go through any lengths that they can, any lengths that they deem necessary to ensure your destruction or at least your continued subservience and captivity. If you do not believe me, If you do not believe in the links that your enemy will go to, you need to visit their websites. Just as we have a forum on United Black America, they too have forums. I would encourage you to go and visit www.stormfront.org. www.stormfront.org. And there is another forum called the Vanguard News Network. These are the forums that our enemies go to develop strategies and talk about us, discuss what's going on. For instance, as I'm talking to you, the case against Zimmerman, the murderer of Trayvon Martin, is currently going on. And there's a pretty lively discussion going on the Stormfront website. And one visitor writes, "Good luck, brother. Lock and load. Stock up on food and water. Lock all of your doors. You should also accompany your wife as frequently as you can. Stay away from black neighborhoods. Lie in wait and destroy anyone who would wish you or your family harm. Just wait it out if you can. It might really get bad in places like yours. Stay home on the day the verdict is reached. You don't want to end up like Reginald Denny in the 92 L.A. riots." And he responds, "I have at least two or three magazines for my handgun, a knife, machete, and sword in the car. If I lived in one of the hot, quote-unquote, chimp-out zones, I will definitely pay attention to our three-fifths human friends. I think the word is out there by now, thanks to the net, but again, be prepared." People need to understand that these animals are not capable of domestication. A white man is on trial for self-defense against one of them, and now society is forced to militarize itself for defense against them. How ironic is that? I find it ironic that Zimmerman ain't even white, but whatever. What they're really supporting is the white supremacist system trying to maintain its position over blacks. But anyway, Stormfront is where they go to discuss strategies against us. So if you find yourself underestimating the lengths that your opponent will go to defeat you and to maintain your position of inferiority under them, then go to Stormfront and check that out in Vanguard News Network, where you should be anyway. You should be there collecting intelligence on the activities of your enemies. You should be there because, I mean, some of y'all need a wake-up call. Some of you believe that we can all just get along. Some of you all believe that white folks have your best interest at heart. Some of you believe that there is not a war going on against our people. Some of you believe that our position is the result of our own activities. While that is in part true, our position is the result of our own behavior and activities. Our own behavior and activities can also get us out of this situation, this ma'afa that we find us in. But by going over there, you will get a wake-up call. I want you to force yourself to read what hundreds and thousands of these Albions have to say about you and how you worship their culture, right? About how gullible you are financially, how divided you are from your people, how weak you are, how immoral you are, how cowardly you are, because you won't stand up against bullshit like we talked about in the first segment. You won't stand up against the buffoonery and the fuckery and the coonery going on World Star Hip Hop. You promote that shit. You laugh at that shit. When in reality, it's sad and it perpetuates our position here amongst these Albions. It diminishes black consciousness. So never underestimate the lengths that your opponent will go to defeat you. And that's in anything. If you are in business, whatever it is that you are not doing, best believe your competitor is doing. If you are leading an organization, quote unquote, and you're not out there marketing and recruiting, if you're not out there actively participating in the community, if you're not out there providing goods and services for the people, best believe somebody else is. Right? In business, if you're not willing to market yourself aggressively, your competitor is, and they're willing to do those things, and they'll ultimately run you out of business. So bringing this back in terms of the Pan-African art of war, we just laid out those 9 weapons that have been used against us. And if you don't believe those weapons are actively being used against us, I give you 9 examples for each and every one of them, including the entire documentary that we just heard, Ma'afa 21. You can go and watch the whole thing.
there's no links that they won't go to. And if you don't believe me, you know what I'm saying? Ask any of the Chamacum Indians. Ask any of the Hoopa Indians. You feel where I'm going here? Ask any of the Shasta Indians, the Yurok, the Shawnee, the Tigawa, the Navajo. Ask them. Well, you can't because they don't exist anymore. Those are the links that your enemy will go to ensure your destruction. We talk a lot about the destruction of the Tasmanian Aborigines. An entire group of people were wiped off the face of the earth, never to be seen again. That's the length that they'll go to destroy you. You think they won't kill you down to every man, woman, and child? They will. And for those of you who aren't familiar, let me read you an account written by Jared Diamond, a professor at UCLA. Tactics for hunting down Tasmanians included riding out on horseback to shoot them, setting steel traps to catch them, and putting out poison flour where the Tasmanian Aborigines might find and eat it. White shepherds cut off the penis and testicles of Aboriginal men to watch the men run a few hundred yards before dying from bleeding out. At a hill that's called Mount Victory, white settlers slaughtered 30 Tasmanians and threw their bodies over a cliff. One party of white police officers killed 70 Tasmanian men and women and dashed out the children's brains. Such vile and animalistic behavior on the part of the white settlers of Tasmania was the rule rather than the exception. All right. In spite of their cruelty, however, punishment was rare for white folks. Now, the few punishments that we do know that were handed out, the few administrations of justice, so to speak, was one man was flogged for wearing the ears and other body parts of a black boy that he had mutilated alive. Another man was punished for cutting off the little finger of an Aborigine and using it as a tobacco stopper. 25 lashes were ordered for Europeans convicted of tying Aboriginal Tasmanian women to logs and burning them with firebrands, or forcing the women to wear the head of her freshly murdered husband on a string around her neck. We hear of children kidnapped as pets or servants. Time out there. We have white families adopting black children in epidemic proportions. And I'm reading to you what happened to the Tasmanian Aborigines. We hear of children kidnapped as pets or servants. You think these white families are integrating these adopted children into their homes so that they can give them the quote of love and kindness that they didn't receive from their birth parents? Hell no. You out of your mind if you think that this is a benevolent activity on the part of these damned Albions who have demonstrated time and time again over the course of thousands of years their hatefulness, their wickedness, and their willingness to go to any lengths to destroy black civilization, men, women, and children. All right? A man named Carrot, desiring a native Aboriginal woman, decapitated her husband, hung her husband's head around her neck, and drove her home to his shack, where he proceeded to rape and murder her. These are firsthand accounts coming from the white folks themselves of the lengths that they went to in their bloodthirst to eradicate the Tasmanian Aborigines. People that had been on the island of Tasmania near Australia for hundreds of thousands of years. People who are closer to the original men and women of the planet than anybody else in existence. Don't underestimate the lengths that they'll go to destroy you. They will kill us down to the last one. The only thing that stands to protect us against that is a strong culture based on values. Our courage, our unity, and our knowledge of their willingness to destroy us. Principle number two of the Pan-African Art of War. Do not rely on one strategy. Do not rely on one strategy. Open warfare is but one strategy that can be used against the Ma'afa, that can be used against these Albions that seek our destruction. Therefore, we can develop strategies when it comes to entertainment. Entertainment can be a weapon just as much as open warfare can. just as much as open warfare can. Music speaks to the soul. Music is a spiritual anomaly. It stirs your soul. It inspires you. It motivates you. Music can be a weapon. Our entertainment can be a weapon. Our education can be a weapon. I don't need to talk about the importance of knowing Black history and learning Black history to most of our listeners. Most of you all understand it. But for some of you who don't, I'm going to go back to a scroll that we haven't touched on in a little while called Civilization or Barbarism by Sheikh Anta Diop. And if you go to page 211, Sheikh Anta Diop tells us the following. For every individual, his or her own cultural identity is a function of that of his or her people. All right. Consequently, one must define the cultural identity of a people. This means one must analyze the components of the collective personality. And we know that three factors contribute to this formation of a culture. Right. So we're talking about how to define and identify cultural identity. Factor number one is the historical factor, right? Factor number two is the linguistic factor, and factor number three is the psychological factor. These are the three things that make up a culture, right? So we use the word culture as a general term, but these are the specifics here, as given to us by the elder and scholar Sheikh Anta Diop. He continues on that every attempt to reinforce or modify the cultural personality must consist of carefully studying the appropriate mode of action on these three factors. Okay, so earlier we were talking about gang violence, or not gang violence, but just outright violence in Chicago. If we want to change the personality of our culture, we need to look at our history, our language, and our psychology. Those three things. It has to start there. All right. So he continues on. The historical factor is the cultural cement that unifies elements of a people to make them into a whole. Let me read that again. The historical factor is the cultural cement that unifies elements of a people to make them into a whole. It is the historical conscience thus engendered that allows a people to distinguish itself from a population. So without knowledge of our history, this is me talking, without knowledge of our history, we are indistinguishable from the society that the Albions have created. You know what I'm saying? You don't have any knowledge of your own history, so you adopt American history as your history. Out there popping fireworks for the damn 4th of July. The birthday of a country that was not established for your benefit, Black man and woman, Moorish man and woman, Hebrew man and woman. The essential thing for people is to rediscover the thread that connects them to their most remote ancestral past. In the face of cultural aggression of all sorts, in the face of all disintegrating factors of the outside world, the most efficient cultural weapon with which a people can arm itself is this feeling of historical continuity. The erasing, the destruction of the historical consciousness has been, since time began, part of the techniques of colonialization, enslavement, and the debasement of a people. And I'm going to end it with this passage. The loss of national sovereignty and of historical conscience following a prolonged foreign occupation creates stagnation, or sometimes regression, disintegration, and the partial return to barbarism, as was the case of Egypt under the Romans, and if I can continue his passage, as is the case of us Black men and women in America. All right, the loss of our national sovereignty and our historical conscience following prolonged foreign occupation, all right, results in regression, disintegration, and a partial return to barbarism. And I'll be damned if we don't see that today. The caller talking about the situation in Chicago and our overall condition as a people is a direct result of the break from our knowledge of ourselves and our history. It's a direct result. By going back and studying our history, we reestablish that continuity, that consciousness that binds us to Africa and that binds us to each other. And with that knowledge, we can then start to counter the strategies that the Albion has employed against us to keep us subservient, that the Arab has employed to keep us subservient and under their control, that other groups will observe and look at and use to keep us under their control. Everybody's using these strategies against us, and we're the only ones that are standing on a battlefield pretending like nothing's going on. You're standing in the middle of a battlefield, and you're acting as if it's not even going on. You shake your head in disgust, and then you go back and you watch TV. You complain that something needs to be done, and yet you still get up and go to work for an Albion company every morning. You talk about how little faith you have in the United States government, and yet you still go and vote. Voting is the most passive, the easiest thing that you can do. But by far, it is not the most effective thing that you should be doing. We're going to do the knowledge on that in a later episode. I don't want to get off on tangent. Y'all already got my blood pressure up on this, so I'm going to keep rolling. But just understand, that's the importance of learning black history. You see me constantly pushing these books on you. You know what I'm saying? You hear me constantly talking about the need for you to study. I mean, we have a whole recommended scroll section. That's why this is important. All right? In order for you to be a Pan-Africanist, you must study. In order for you to be an effective member of this society, this community, you must study. Stop letting them hide shit from you in books. Feel me? So do not rely on one strategy. Economics, education, these are strategies that we can employ against those who would seek to do us harm. All right? So economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, all right? Politics, religion, sex, and warfare. These are all weapons that we can use. There should be strategies developed for each of these, which my organization has already developed these strategies. Of course, I'm not just going to put these strategies out there for any old Albion to come pick up and assess. But I'm going to leave you with a passage by the legendary Sun Tzu, the Chinese author of The Art of War. He writes, "The one who counts on victory at headquarters before even doing battle is the one who has the most strategic factors on his side. The one who counts on inability to prevail at headquarters before doing battle is the one who has the least strategic factors on his side. In other words, if your house is not in order, you can count on losing the battle before you even start. The one with many strategic factors in his favor wins. The one with few strategic factors in his favor loses. How much the more so for one with no strategic factors in his favor? In other words, you're definitely going to lose if you have fewer strategic factors in your favor. And if you have none, then your destruction is assured. Observing the matters in this way, I can see who will win and who will lose the battle." That's Sun Tzu. All right. So don't just think of this in terms as hand-to-hand combat, right? Don't just take to the streets armed with knives and guns and think you're going to overturn this entire system. There must be a combined and unified strategy, a comprehensive strategy that covers all nine of those fields. So if you can't do battle physically, you can do battle culturally. You can do battle politically. You can do battle spiritually. All right? The final principle that we're going to touch on today is hold the line. Hold the line. Battles may be lost, but the war must be won. And here's what I mean by that. Think about all the great mass movements of the past. Think about the war that Queen Nzinga waged against the Portuguese. Think about Martin Luther King's great grassroots movement. Think about Brother Malcolm X's Organization for African American Unity. Think about the old Black Panther Party headed by Huey P. Newton. Think about the United Negro Improvement Association headed by Marcus Mosiah Garvey. Think about the kingdom, if you would call it that, that Kwame Nkrumah built in the state of Ghana. Think about the progress that Patrice Lumumba laid down. Think about the progress that His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie Rastafari laid down. All right. Once these men and women were taken away from us, their movements fell apart, much to our discredit. Much to our discredit, for those of us who were alive and followed behind them and witnessed their lives being taken, witnessed their organizations just falling apart after they were gone, we should be ashamed of ourselves. You hold the line. You preserve gains that were made by these men and women. Just because they are gone does not mean the movement stops or disappears. The death of one leader should never be the death of a movement. Because if you look around, where's the United Negro Improvement Association today? There's but a handful of members holding the line. Where is Malcolm X's Organization for African Unity? African American Unity. Most of you didn't even know he had built an organization after he had left the Nation of Islam. Most of you have never heard of Patrice Lumumba. Most of you have never read Conscientism by Kwame Nkrumah, despite the fact that it is required reading for all members of United Black America. So if you're not even aware of these people and the movements that they built, how do you know where to hold the line? You don't. Again, in order to be a Pan-Africanist, one must study. And after you have finished studying, which you never really finish, you hold the line. You hold on to all the progress made by your ancestors, because that is not only a way of honoring them, it is a way of ensuring that the resources and the assets they built for our liberation continue on and maintain their usefulness. You have got to hold the line. Never again let an organization, never again let a movement, never again let an asset be lost because of one man or woman's death or loss. As in chess, a piece may be removed from the board, but victory is still possible, even if all you have left are pawns. You see what I'm saying? If I am killed today, I can say with all confidence that United Black America will continue on. We will fight and we will hold the line economically. We will fight and we will continue to hold the line as far as entertainment is concerned. We will fight and we will continue to hold the line as far as our education goes. We will fight and we will continue to hold the line as far as our labor goes, as far as law goes, politics. We will fight and we will hold the line spiritually. We will fight and we will hold the line to honor our ancestors and to ensure that this fight continues on until victory is attained. And that victory is nothing short of the establishment of a Pan-African state and the rebirth, the renaissance of Black consciousness and Black civilization. That has been today's episode of United Black America Radio. Peace.
Till I was drunk though.